And with that, our series on men takes a musical detour today as we hear about boy bands and why they're not called man bands. NPR's Franny Kelly and Jason King, both music journalists, have been thinking about this and wondering how the idea of the boy band has evolved over the years from New Edition to One Direction. That's what makes you beautiful.
First, what is a boy band? Where do they come from? And what is the difference between a boy band and a man band?
Okay, so boy band we can define as an all-male vocal group. They're usually in their teens or their 20s. They could be a duo, a trio, quartet, quintet, sextet, it doesn't matter. But they're generally performing crossover pop material to a largely teen or preteen female demographic. So there's a few things that really distinguish a boy band from what you might call a man band. Boy bands are usually factory produced, meaning that there's usually some kind of CEO or talent manager who's a Svengali, who's involved, is responsible for the sound and the look and the casting of the band. The band often has interchangeable members, so there's a lot of turnover. Very often boy bands, as opposed to man bands, are performing a kind of bubblegum pop music, which reaches a large demographic, not a lot of musical complexity, very simplistic messages. And very often the big difference is that boy bands don't play their own instruments and they rarely write their own songs.
Okay, but when I think about boy bands, I think about their fans. And then my first image is actually Beatlemania. I don't think most people would say the Beatles right away when you mention a boy band, but how do they fit in?
Well, I think in a lot of ways the Beatles created the template for boy bands. They were never called boy bands at the time. That term didn't even come up until decades later.
Okay.
But early on, they were basically covering songs by artists like Little Richard and Chuck Berry and so on. The music was definitely bubblegum. But most people don't think of the Beatles as a boy band because the later work that they did, starting with albums like Revolver and Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, that work really eclipsed some of their earlier work. They write their own songs. They were seen as kind of auteurs of their own destiny. And so I think when you're talking about a boy band, the real key that underwrites what a boy band is that lack of control, right? That there's somebody else who's manipulating the whole thing to produce a specific effect in young girls as their audience.
Right, but not all boy bands then have to sound the same to achieve that effect.
Exactly. I think when we talk about boy bands, there's a great diversity to the range of sounds that's associated with boy bands, and maybe we should listen to some of that diversity.
That's New Edition, who to a lot of people is the boy bands. They come up in the early 80s, which we could call the golden era for boy bands. And they're begun by Maurice Starr. Then he goes on to start New Kids on the Block. Step by step, ooh, baby. In 1991, New Kids on the Block makes more money than Madonna and Michael Jackson. So I guess my question is, how did Maurice Starr know that this was going to work?
Well, there was a model for Maurice Starr, and that was Berry Gordy. Berry Gordy, who's the CEO of Motown, a black man, who looked at the Beatles, saw how successful they were, and said, let me do the same thing. So he put together the Jackson 5. Well, they're already together, but he basically signed them to Motown, brought them to Los Angeles, and started Jackson 5 Mania, which was very similar to Beatlemania. And then, in the 1980s, Maurice Starr, who's also a black man, takes Berry Gordy's example of the Jackson 5 and starts his own bubblegum black group doing R&B music, which is New Edition. And then when New Edition doesn't cross over the way that he'd like to, and you have to remember the 80s was the decade of crossover, Michael Jackson, Prince, and so on, he says, let me put together a white band of young guys who's gonna, their image is gonna be based on the New Edition, and I'm gonna put them out there, and then they're gonna be successful, and they were.
So now we have New Kids on the Block. They're selling a product to young girls, which is also going to be used by these young girls to define their own sexuality and to define these boys' sexuality, right? And the way that works is through these archetypes. You have John, Paul, George, and Ringo. Everybody has their own favorite. You have the Jackson 5, pick a brother. You have New Edition. You could be a Bobby Brown fan or not if you so choose. So not only do each of those characters exponentially increase a group's fan base, they also provide safety in numbers, in a sense. Because basically, each girl is having these connections in front of other people, right? It's not like a solo star. It is less direct. And I think that all combines to making something that at least parents think is very PG. I'm not sure it's quite so clean in the girls' minds. And how I'd be loving you
forever. I think that's true. And I mean, I think the other thing we have to talk about when you talk about boy bands is race. You know, in the context of the U.S., obviously, there's a long history in which to be a black man or a Latino man is to always already automatically be threatening. And so one of the things that's interesting about the New Kids on the Block is that, you know, here are some working class young white men who appeal largely to white females. But you also have Boyz II Men who comes along the scene, and they are basically modeled on a kind of barbershop, you know, quartet or quintet model. They are sort of non-threatening, but they also have certain kind of musical moments like I'll Make Love to You, right, which is just on the borderline of being sexual or not. I'll make love to you like you want me to. From then, you also have groups like Jodeci, who most people don't think of as a boy band at all because, you know, they're making a lot of innovative musical choices. But of course, once you see the rise of Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and groups like 98 Degrees and LFO and from Britain, groups like Take That and so on, the 90s really becomes a time of a kind of racial consolidation of boy bands. And from then on, we really think of the boy band as being white. Even though there are black boy bands like B2K and Imagine and Immature, they don't have the kind of crossover potential and certainly not the sales numbers that you see with the white boy bands. And that takes us up into the contemporary moment with groups like One Direction and The Wanted and so on, where even if there are multicultural members, basically the kind of racial character of the group is white. I'm glad you came.
Boy bands are made for young girls, and there will always be young girls spending a short time going through some of the biggest changes of their lives, and so the concept will never go away. I'm Franny Kelly, NPR News.
And I'm Jason King, host of NPR's streaming R&B radio channel, I'll Take You There.
Need more boy band music? You know you do. We have a playlist that covers 50 years of boy bands at npr.org/music. Indulge. I'm glad you came.